Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. Today, we have joining us Nick Leroy, who is a freelance SEO consultant. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. For those people who are not aware of who you are or your background, could you just give a bit of an overview of when you started in the industry and how you've ended up being a freelance SEO?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been in the SEO industry for over 10 years now. Historically, I kind of joke that I'm a recovering agency SEO because I had been agency side my entire career prior to going out freelance, as you had mentioned. A lot of people are interested in how I made the decision to freelance. And I had written a story, and Mark, maybe you can link to it below. You know, it's on the SEO Freelancer, where I have mentioned that during COVID, I had actually lost my job as director of SEO. The company that I had worked with actually got rid of their SEO services altogether. So it was an opportunity to test out the market, and I've really never looked back since. It's been a great decision.
Right. So for the people that's maybe in a full-time job, who's thinking of going freelance full-time, what are the sorts of things they need to be aware of before they actually jump ship?
Great question. I think the first thing that I would recommend before even giving the tips is to not necessarily jump 100%, you know, unless there's a situation where, you know, you aren't working full time or you have just some extraordinary circumstances. I think you'll find that there's always a benefit to starting freelance part time while you're doing, you know, your full time job. And the reason for that is freelancing is quite different than an in-house or agency job, not in the sense of the SEO is different. You know, we all know how to do titles. We know, you know, how to do reporting, et cetera, et cetera. But there's more of the business aspect that not everybody can kind of wrap their head around. And what I mean specifically by that is, you know, you have to find your own leads. You have to be able to pitch your own services. You have to be able to build scopes. You have to be able to price. You have to be able to collect payment, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think those are some of the skills that some people don't necessarily think about when they are going out on their own. So I think one thing that I would recommend, as mentioned before, and apologies for video slipping up there, is just making sure that you're getting some of this opportunity while you're working full-time, when you're not quite reliant on the money coming in regularly from the full-time switch.
Right. So for yourself, you said it was because you got made redundant from your job. Yes?
Correct.
Now, do you think if you hadn't been made redundant, you wouldn't have gone freelance?
You know, I want to tell you that I would have eventually, but I don't think I would have. And the reason being is it's really hard to leave a steady paycheck. You know, regardless whether you think your pay is fair or not, you know, it's fairly reliable. You know, every couple of weeks, you know, every month you get a paycheck. And then especially if you're freelancing on the side, as I always had, you know, you can kind of increase your earning potential. So I don't know if I would have ever done it. I had talked about it. I've wanted to. But the other part of freelancing that, you know, maybe we'll go into a little more detail is I feel like it's a little bit easier when it's just yourself. But if you have a family or children, you know, then the risk is larger. Because as I always joke with my wife, it's one thing if I'm eating rice and beans all night long. It's maybe even okay if she and I are both eating rice and beans all night long, but I'm never going to have my three kids go without. So there's just an added risk to that. So to answer your question directly, I'd like to think that I would go out on my own eventually, on my own accord. But at the same time, you know, I'm not one that takes massive risks when it comes to my family. So I'd probably be in that same job if I had not been made redundant.
All right. So when you went freelance at the very beginning, Was there a time when you thought, oh, I want to go back to a full-time job?
Not at all. Honestly, I was so burnt out from working for other people that my biggest concern was kind of, as we talked about, was being able to, you know, earn the revenue enough to be able to pay my bills. And my wife and I had an agreement because when I did get let go, I did interview and receive a couple job opportunities that really weren't to my satisfaction. And I really was kind of committed to going freelance. And we made an agreement, my wife and I, that I would get 6 months. And by that point, I had to basically make the equivalent of what my prior salary was, you know, each month. And I was very fortunate through some of my freelancing experiences that I had while working full time, as well as having some network opportunities, my SEO for Lunch newsletter, that I was lucky that the money was not an issue. You know, I had people come to me, they needed help, and I was able to, you know, replicate the earnings pretty quickly. And then I almost kind of built a little bit of an ego of the sense of, I don't want to work for anybody else. I'm sick of people telling me what to do. I don't want to be told what I have to do, you know, or how to respond, or you can say this, you can't say that. So no, I mean, there's days where you're like, I don't really want to work, but I would say that's not any different than a 9-to-5 job. So I can honestly look you in the face and say, it's been the best decision that I've made. And I don't think I've ever had a true thought of going back. I think if I'm being completely transparent, that's probably one of my biggest fears right now is having to go back.
Right. You mentioned your newsletter. What sort of newsletter is it?
Yeah, absolutely. So anybody who's interested can check out SEOforLunch.com. And what it is it's a weekly newsletter that just helps you stay up to date with all the changes that are happening in the search world. It's a weekly email, and anything that is being published from Google or Microsoft, or, you know, in some instances, even like Yandex, is being highlighted right at the top. And then also included in there are, I also own or co-own a boutique SEO job board. So I include open SEO positions. And then what I also like to do is highlight some really good content that's being written within the SEO industry. And I know, Mark, I've highlighted some of your content in the past, as well as, you know, others. So really the gist of it is, we know as SEOs, we need to stay up to date with all the SEO changes that are happening. But in reality, we don't always have the time to spend hours every single week reading all the content that's being published. So I put it all together in a newsletter. And the reason I call it SEO for Lunch is it's kind of a digestible, you know, list of content that you can read over your lunch break.
Right. And that newsletter, was that a major factor in helping you to go freelance with the exposure you already had from the newsletter?
It was. And one story that, you know, it's become less of a secret because I'm starting to share it, but I actually used the newsletter at the very beginning as a way to educate my own clients, because I was kind of sick of telling multiple clients over and over again the same updates. So I could kind of send one email and chop it up and send it to them. And I started sending it publicly, you know, and allowing anybody to sign up for it. But then at that point, what it turned into was a little bit of my, like, it was a reserve. It was a little bit of an insurance policy. As I was building up the audience, I realized that if I had ever lost my job, this was an opportunity to be able to connect with more people in the industry. And because all I'm doing is giving, you know, later on, if I were to ever make the decision or need to supplement my income or find a new job, I thought it'd be a great opportunity to be able to, you know, network with people, which is ultimately what had happened. When I lost my job, it was literally like the week later in my newsletter, I had written, hey, I'm open for work. You know, I'm kind of in between jobs, not sure what I'm going to do. And, you know, I think I got one of my first gigs that way. So I just reached out and said, hey, I need an audit. I need a couple hours of an SEO's time. You know, how can you help me out?
Right. So as a freelance SEO, what type of clients do you work with? You know, how big are these companies and businesses you work with?
Yeah, so coming from the agency side, I've worked with companies as small as local small businesses like electricians, all the way up to, you know, websites that have hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of pages. So I've kind of niched myself into the enterprise level clientele. I love technical SEO, and I find that it's a pretty big gap in our industry currently. So I like working with clients that have the biggest, messiest, you know, backends and, you know, craziest situations that need to be fixed. So I find that my skill sets kind of align with more enterprise level clientele.
Right. Do you just advise clients, or do you actually get stuck in and get your hands dirty to actually fix things?
Yeah. So the answer is yes and no. I would say at the enterprise level, a lot of clients have, you know, development teams or even content teams. So I am doing a lot more strategy. However, when it's coming to the idea of putting solutions together, I'm certainly, you know, building the solutions and scalable, you know, solutions for these sites. But when you get into sites that have a million pages, there is no WordPress backend where you're going and making changes to, say, a title tag or adding an odd, you know, link here or there. What I'm doing is I'm building case studies to justify how, if we change, you know, URLs, or if we're going to do dynamic title tags or add this type of content, how do we justify the amount of effort that goes into it against what we think the return is? So it's just a different type of, you know, feet on the ground, working hard versus going in and actually writing a blog post or, like I said, optimizing a single page.
Right. So why should these enterprise companies work with a freelancer rather than an agency?
Yeah, so I'm not a good salesperson, but I will tell you what I tell everybody else. You know, coming from the agency side, I'm very aware of how they sell their services. They have kind of what I'll call their A+, you know, SEO come in. They can talk a great game. They probably are very smart themselves and can do any and all the work that I do. However, in most instances, the SEO agency will have those A+ people come in and kind of sell the dream. And then what they do is they hand the work over to junior resources. And that's how agencies are able to scale. So my pitch is, you're going to work with me. Like, literally, I'm going to be the one that joins you for the call. I'm going to be the one that helps you with the strategy. I'm going to be the one that sends you the invoice. I'm going to be the one that follows up to your emails. So you are paying for my expertise, and you are getting me all day, every day, or, you know, within the scope of your work. And that is why a lot of clients will recommend going with an individual freelancer versus an agency. And in sometimes they don't want to necessarily hire in-house because they don't have the budget to pay for someone with maybe our skill set to be there full time.
Yeah. Now, I've had conversations with an awful lot of SEOs who's gone freelance. Then they've suddenly realized all the business stuff that goes with it and said, well, I'm really good at what I do, SEO, but I didn't understand how difficult it was to actually get clients. Now, do you have some guidance on how these people can start or push forward on building up a client base for themselves?
Absolutely. And I think this kind of goes back to the very beginning of our conversation when we were saying do it part-time in addition to a full-time role, because that is by far the most difficult part is getting clients. You have to get a client to be able to show your value, get a testimonial to then be able to get more people. And it's really difficult. I would say that I was very, very fortunate that I had a network and I had given a lot to the industry through, you know, various articles and newsletters, podcasts, et cetera, while I was working full time. So I never really had asked for much in return. So when I did go out, I felt like I had a network of people that I could kind of ping and say, do you happen to have work, or do you know somebody that you're willing to vet for me, or, you know, vet my name and say, you know, Nick is worthwhile working with? So I was very fortunate. Now, to answer your question directly, somebody that doesn't have 10 years of experience before going freelance full time, is going to have to kind of start at the beginning. And I think this is where there's a couple different options. Historically, I was never a big fan of, say, Upwork, because I thought it was kind of chasing, you know, the lowest price. But in my own podcast, The SEO Freelancer, I had actually talked to a couple individuals that are making six figures through Upwork. So there's definitely opportunities to use those type of marketplaces to be able to just start out. Now, obviously, there's drawbacks and benefits to it that we won't necessarily go into. But that is one area. And again, the main goal is simply to start getting some clients so you can get some testimonials, you can get some case studies that show that you know what you're doing and that you can get these SEO wins. The other thing that I was a big fan, and I actually did this when I went out, was doing overflow work or kind of white label work for SEO agencies. You know, we talked about the benefit of being able to pitch yourself as the value add to, you know, these larger companies or to any company. But again, I have the benefit of being able to share people's names who will vouch for my services. So when you don't necessarily have those, you can go to agencies, and a lot of times they're looking for a little bit of support. You know, it can be doing some audits in the back end. It can be doing, you know, some more of the linking or even some of the strategy or reporting. Now, the only caveat I will say to that is that work is really good for paying the bills, as in you get the revenue in, but it's not really good for building your network because you don't get to take any public credit. These aren't your clients. You're not going to be able to use those case studies or use them as testimonials. So while a lot of people make a good living white labeling essentially for agencies, it's not how I would recommend scaling your services moving forward.
Right. Talking about scaling, I can't remember how far back it was, but I read an article you've written on your story and how you've grown a freelance SEO business into multiple six figures.
Yep.
Right. As one person, how do you grow a freelance business into such high revenue?
The short answer is always increase your prices. And what I mean by that is, as you are providing value, it's moving away from necessarily hourly work. You know, it's really trying to get into value-based pricing. And this is especially great when you are working with larger companies, because when they are selling, you know, items that, you know, say have an average order value of $100 and you're charging $5,000, you know, being able to help them move from $1 million of revenue to $1.2 million, you know, is an easy mathematical equation where your $5,000 retainer is a no-brainer for them. What happens with a lot of freelancers and even agencies is they're working with service providers or people that are selling products that have very low margins. So if you're selling things that have a dollar and you are charging $1,000, you have to help them sell an incremental 1,000 widgets, whatever you want to call them, before you're even making your money back. So part of it is going back and just kind of knowing your audience, knowing where you can provide value and charging appropriately. Because the thing that I'm most vocal about is, as a solo consultant, you know, a freelancer, I am only one person and there's only 24 hours in a day. I have made the conscious decision to not scale and have other people, you know, on my team or to start an agency for various reasons. So what I need to do is make sure that I'm getting the most for every hour that I'm working. And that's where I just continue to ratchet up my rates. And, you know, I very rarely have anybody push back on it, because I always prioritize making sure that they are getting more value than they are paying me.
Right. So there's been lots of conversations in the industry for freelancers based on selling time versus value. Now, as you've explained there, you sell based on value, but right, a lot of SEO freelancers, they don't understand on how to actually sell value to the clients, because they do X amount of hours, they get paid for X amount of hours, they charge X amount, and that's an easy model for them. But just to understand how these freelancers can move away from the hourly rate onto value, what sort of things and structures do they need to do and conversations do they need to have?
So that's a great question. And I want to paint a situation that I think everybody can kind of agree with. When you are trading time for money, you are always paid more money for the more time that you've taken. That inherently does not encourage efficient work. You know, for instance, if I can get a client to say, I have a budget of 10 hours and, you know, you want to, you know, let's just say arbitrarily grab all the URLs on the website. You can go and manually click on every link, copy and paste into a spreadsheet, right? And you'll spend 10 hours and you'll get paid for 10 hours. We know, as well as everyone that's listening to it, we could also fire up Sitebulb or Screaming Frog, run a crawl, and 20 seconds later, have all those URLs. So now, as a consultant that's charging hourly, we are not being paid to be efficient. So that's one of those things where it's like, you don't want to have a conversation with your clients of like, what is fair and how much time should this take? And also, you should not be penalized because you know how to add value in a quick amount of time. So again, what I'm trying to get at is it's having conversations with clients about ultimately what are their goals and what are certain metrics that you can help them hit through various initiatives and focusing on those type of deliverables. So then it doesn't matter how much time it takes. It's more about being able to provide those valuable deliverables and measuring how they're driving, you know, revenue and performance to the sites. The caveat to performance-based pricing is you have to know what adds value. So everyone, including myself, has been in this situation. You said, think about it as like a project. These are the best ones where you learn from. And Mark, you probably have done this as well. You kind of eyeball something, you're like, okay, that's a $3,000 project. And in the back of your mind, it's like, I think it'll take me 20 hours, right? That's $150 an hour. That's about right. Then you start up the project. And because you've already committed to that price, if you can get it done in 4 hours, fantastic. But in some instances, everybody gets burned once, where it's going to actually take you 50 hours to be able to deliver it. Now, you could go back and talk to the client and explain scope, but in my opinion, that makes me look bad. So what I'm doing is I'm always tracking my time and having a better understanding of how long it takes me to do certain tasks so that when I do value-based or project pricing, I have a pretty good idea of the time that it's going to take me.
All right.
I would say that's just a couple. You know, I know I kind of rambled on a little bit, but hopefully that addresses, you know, kind of value-based pricing versus hourly rates, the benefits and you know, drawbacks of it.
Yeah, it sounds like in order to move to the value-based pricing, you have to have a good understanding already of top-level SEO. So what sort of skill set do freelance SEOs need to have?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I would say this skill set is irrelevant of freelance, in-house, or agency, but I think effective communication is the biggest gap in our industry. And what I mean by that is a lot of us can get down into the weeds. We can talk about XML sitemaps and href lang tags and canonicals, you know, things that, you know, get us excited in the industry. But to our clients, it's going right over their head. So when we talk about what are their goals, who are their competitors, what are kind of the levers that we can pull, we need to be able to effectively communicate that to our clients. And that, you know, goes hand in hand with setting expectations. So when I'm talking to my clients and I'm telling them, this is the price, you know, for my services, here's what I'm looking to accomplish for you, and here's what I believe, you know, are some of the results, it's sitting down and having these honest conversations and talking to them as humans and not as like a technical SEO, you know, trying to impress them with, you know, big SEO terminology. So I think really the communication is the biggest quote unquote secret, if there is one. You know, that is the one that everybody, I don't care how long you've been in the industry, can focus on, because we all can do better. The other thing, and I know this sounds really silly, but actually know what you're doing. I'm finding there's such a gap in this industry where people know a lot about one little corner of SEO. You know, say they're really good at on-page SEO, or they kind of have an idea of what they're doing from a content perspective, but they're not exceptionally good at it. Like right now, they're currently working kind of within a system, and the system works well, but the individuals don't always know exactly what they're doing to provide the value. And if you don't know that, then you can't communicate it appropriately, which then just goes into your clients not necessarily having trust in you. You're not being able to provide value. And then, you know, ultimately engagements end because they don't believe they're getting value from you.
Right. So as a freelance SEO, is it better to have an overview of the whole SEO landscape, or is it good to specialize in one certain thing like technical SEO or other areas of SEO?
Yeah, that's another really good question. And I hate that I'm going to say this, but I think it really does depend. And the reason I say that is I think it's really important to have an overarching expertise, or at least understanding everything that exists, because part of being an SEO freelancer is, as I mentioned before, building that trust. And part of that is actually being able to raise your hand and say, I am not the solution for this need. For example, I am not the best at local SEO. I can help you set up your GMB profiles, you know, get you all set up with that, do it on page, you know, the very basics. But it's not something that I actively sell myself on, because I have friends in the industry that I know can do significantly better work and probably even at a cheaper rate than I would do. But that is an instance where I am aware of all the best practices. I could fumble through it, but I would rather raise my hand, say there's a better or more cost-effective solution, and hand someone over to an individual that's going to crush it. So the opposite of that is making sure that you're working with clients whose needs match your skill sets. Again, I had talked about, I believe technical SEO is more of my strength. So when I do project-based work, a lot of time it's either technical audits or they're like migrations. You know, those are some things that I find that this industry just like shuns. They just think it's like the worst thing ever. And I happen to really enjoy that type of work. It doesn't concern me because I feel that I know what I'm doing. I have the testimonials and the case studies to support that. So I go after those type of clients. And, you know, that's just kind of an area where, you know, it matches my interests. They are willing to pay my rates. And I think that's where it becomes a good fit. However, like I said, it is important because there are some clients that do need a little bit of everything. And again, if it kind of matches your pricing and your services, you know, those are opportunities as well. So I guess there is no clear-cut answer to that, but it really depends on which angle you're going at, how much you're charging, and how much value you believe you can provide.
Right. What has been your biggest challenges on the road to SEO freelancing?
I think my biggest challenge is honestly just kind of setting goals and trying to keeping myself motivated. Because unlike when we are working for somebody else, we always have a boss that's kind of pushing us to do more, accomplish this, get that next promotion, get the next raise, you know, and those are kind of goals that we can go after. Whereas in the freelance world, you can kind of take it as easy as you want. You know, do you want to kind of make the minimum amount to pay your bills, keep your family healthy, and maximize time out of work? Do you want to work as much as you possibly can and try to earn as much as you can? And I find that I continue to be kind of stretched on both sides. It's like some months it's like, I want to just crank out as much work because I'm prioritizing the earnings. The next month it's like, wow, you know, it's the summer. It's great. My kids aren't in school. I don't want to be stuck behind a a computer all the time. So maybe I'm taking on a little bit less work. But what I find is those goals are changing all the time. So sometimes it's a little bit difficult to stay motivated when, like I said, those goals are always kind of moving around.
Right. So actually getting paid, right? Now, obviously some freelancers charge up front, but obviously the bigger the company, that's less likely to happen, right?
Very true.
So as a freelancer that actually needs people to pay on time, what sort of measures have you got in place to make sure that your invoices are paid on time?
Yeah, I really like that question. So this is going to be different for everybody that you talk to. I am pretty risk adverse. So what I do is I establish for anything that's project-based, I always do 50% upfront and 50% upon completion with very clearly identified deliverables. So for instance, I know one thing people will do that is a mistake is when they do technical audits, they'll say like completion of audit execution or something like that. But then if your clients are never going to actually execute it, they don't feel that they have to pay you. Whereas I will say 50% upon signing and 50% of deliverable of the actual audit itself. When it comes to retainers, ongoing charges, you're right, especially as you work with larger clients, not many are going to pay in advance. But what I do is I have a very strict like net 15 or net 30. And I always insist on billing on the first of the month so that I am not putting any more risk than 1 month service of not getting paid. Meaning on January 1st, we start the engagement. I invoice them on day one. And the latest that I will do my net is 30. So if I don't get paid by February 1st, I tell the client that I'm not working with them anymore until I get paid. So, and that's because in my situation, I am okay with taking the risk of not getting paid for 1 month's worth of services, but I'm not willing to work 3 months, you know, and then not get paid. So those are just kind of the boundaries that I have set. You know, there's always situations where people are a couple days late or a couple days early and there's holidays. I mean, it happens. But I think just being able to clearly articulate your payment terms and getting them in your agreements is your best process for making sure that you're getting paid.
Right. So regarding payment terms as a freelancer, is it your payment terms as a freelancer that the company has to agree on? Or have you been in situations where the company said, well, this is how we deal with everybody, take it or leave it?
Yep. And I've been in both of them. I would say a lot of companies, I will say this, like 99% of the time when you're dealing with like accounts payable teams, everything is negotiable, even when they tell you it's not. It just is. Like, that's how business works. So for instance, like I've had people that say we work on net 45, you know, not negotiable on the terms. And then what I will say is, okay, well, I'm going to backdate my first invoice 15 days before the engagement starts. So then it's 30 days. So it's always negotiable, but I would say that's where it's clear within your agreements. If you come to them with something that's reasonable, you know, that's why I always kind of say like 50% upfront or at the end or net 15, net 30. A lot of them are willing to be flexible with it, but there is every once in a while, you know, clients that, you know, they just aren't willing to change. And honestly, that's where you have to make the decision on how much risk you're willing to take. I did have one client, it was a six-figure project or retainer that I was willing to walk away, you know, for different terms, not necessarily pricing. It was about like insurance that I had on my end. And they wanted me to have X amount of dollars in insurance. And I already had insurance, but it wasn't to their number. And I basically told them, this is what I have. you know, and they responded and said, well, we're not negotiable on this. And then I told my point of contact that I was unwilling to invest in more insurance for this project. So I'm not going to, you know, take this project on. And then surprisingly, they came back and said, okay, we can make this work with the, with your insurance. You know, it's not a big deal. So there are times where you just have to be able to, you know, cut your losses and, you know, draw the line in the sand. And like I said, everything's negotiable, but don't let companies, you know, steamroll you either.
Right. So as a new freelancer, where can they go to start generating business, or who is the person within these companies they need to start having discussions with?
Yeah, so I would say anytime you can talk to somebody kind of at the C level or even management, it's basically people that are authorized to sign a check, are the people that you want to talk to. Now, this is where I have found like LinkedIn to be really valuable. So I am frequently, you know, writing on LinkedIn of all sorts of topics, just kind of seeing what's working. But it's an opportunity to share your knowledge and, you know, get in front of people that you don't even necessarily know need SEO support. You know, I'm not one that is a cold outreach. I don't, you know, look for people online and just send them emails. I am actively trying to promote my brand and my services, and I let them come to me, which then kind of going back to what we talked about before, that is a little bit, I don't want to call it like a power play, but there's definitely a benefit to that because they're coming to you. They already have interests, you know, versus you're kind of begging somebody for support. But I would say, you know, work on your public visibility. LinkedIn is a great opportunity. You know, getting published on other websites, you know, being included in roundups, you know, anything that just allows your name to be out there so people can see it regularly, so that when, you know, they have a project in mind, I'm hoping they go, oh yeah, you know, and I get this newsletter from Nick every single week. He's an SEO freelancer. I'm going to just hit reply to that email and see if he's interested in working with me.
All right. Now, agency background versus in-house background. Mm-hmm. As a freelancer, do you think it's helped you personally having an agency background more than it would have done if you had an in-house background?
Without a doubt. And the caveat I say with that is because I had a few senior leadership positions at the agency, I was very familiar with scoping out projects, coming up with pricing, and, you know, and even building out like statements of work. And I think a lot of that is kind of the business aspect of freelancing that a lot of people don't necessarily have the experience of. But because at an agency, a lot of times you're the senior, you know, employees are essentially running their own divisions and kind of running their own business within the business, that certainly gives you a big benefit. I will say that even though at the agency side, you should be able to make really good business cases as well, I would say people that are in-house probably have even more experience of what it takes to be able to build a good case study to get buy-in internally so that they will prioritize the execution of certain SEO techniques. So I do believe that there's benefits to both of them, but I believe for literally being able to start day one and being able to kind of scope out work, pitch work, write agreements, collect money, you know, the agency background definitely gave me a heads up.
Okay. So what would you say is the absolute necessity for an SEO freelancer toolkit? So what tools and systems to run the whole freelance business do they need?
Yep. So the first one isn't an actual tool or system, but I would say you have to actually know what you're doing. And again, you know, people are kind of chuckling right now, but there's a lot of people that I've talked to that are a couple of years in SEO and they love the idea of freelancing. You know, a lot of us have read the 4-Hour Work Week, the Million Dollar Consultant. You know, all we think about is working 3 hours a day and collecting $1 million. And the problem is, you know, for someone like Mark, you, me, like we've put so many years into this industry. When we went, you know, when you go out on your own, you're not really worried about your actual value provide. You're more concerned about what we had talked about before, getting these leads, making sure that you're doing well by your clients. You know, whereas there's a lot of people that kind of want to skip the step of learning SEO. So really you have to double down and building that skill set. So with that, I would say that is like priority number one. And I put that like, if we're on a list of 1 to 10, that's 1 through 7. When it comes to tools, this is one of the things that I had to figure out real quick, because coming from an agency side, I had large tool budgets. Think of every name and tool that's available. I had access to it. I didn't always use them all the same, but it was great to be able to cherry pick. You know, I love this report in one tool. I love this report in the other one. And then when you go freelance and you start realizing I don't have $10,000 a month for tools. So for me, my tool set is actually fairly lean. I like to use, I use SEMrush. I use Screaming Frog and Sitebulb. You know, I like to use Content Harmony for content brief creation. You know, Google Analytics and Google Search Console are my bread and butter. You know, and then the Screaming Frog for like log analyzer. You know, everything that I had mentioned there. And, you know, even like SEOtesting.com is one that I've been using a little bit more as well. That just helps you understand kind of the impact of before and after certain implementations. But as you'll notice, like all of those are a couple hundred bucks a month. A lot of them are, you know, one time a year fee. And, you know, they allow you to get everything that you need done. You know, you don't need to necessarily run all these things through 20 tools to be able to get it. In fact, I think people spend too much time in tools and not enough just thinking critically about what a particular, you know, customer needs or what is good for a, you know, a client's website.
Yeah. He touched upon something there that totally related to a lot of conversations I've had. Like a lot of people who's in the full-time job want to go freelance because they've read all these case studies online that this freelancer's making 200,000, you know, this one's making 1 million, this one's making half, you know, it's painting this rosy picture of freelancing life. But I don't think they understand the actual work and energy that goes into it to get to that level.
Without, you know, a doubt.
I mean, the reality, what is the bare reality of starting out as a freelancer?
Yeah, you know, I take quite a few calls with people that are interested in going out on their own. And a lot of times I'm always asking them kind of what their goals are. And the reason that I do this is because it really changes how I answer the question for them. And really when it comes to goals, as you had kind of alluded to, there's a couple different big opportunities. One is the opportunity to make money. One is the opportunity to claw your time back. And three is just like having control. And I think it's a lot easier for somebody who is leaving, say, a full-time job that is making $50,000 to be able to recreate that in a freelance world. Where I get a little bit concerned are people that are a little bit more senior, and let's say they're making $100,000, $150,000, and they want to go freelance. Like a lot of them aren't prepared to have the first year of, say, making, let's just arbitrarily say $70,000. You know, the odds of you going out on your own and making $200,000 your first year is very slim, you know, unless you are very fortunate to have a large network that you can tap into. You know, you're going to be taking clients on that aren't the best and don't pay the best and don't respect your time because you're starting from the beginning. So I think those are all things that you have to really keep in consideration. So if you're doing it strictly to get rich overnight or to only work one day a week, like you're in for a rude awakening. For me, like I love having absolute control over my schedule. Like I get to decide who I work for. I get to decide what's worth working for, as in like a monetary amount of value. I decide what I take on, what I don't, and nobody tells me that I'm good enough or bad enough besides, you know, my clients. And I think one of the biggest benefits that I've realized afterwards, and this is just coming from, you know, I've been in a position where I've been let go from jobs before. Yes, I have clients, but one thing that I love to say is when you're working kind of 9 to 5, your single job, you more or less have one boss that you have to keep happy. And he or she at any point in time can make the decision to make you redundant. If I have 4 or 5 clients, I can kind of afford to piss one of them off, you know, if even by accident, because I've diversified the amount of people that I need to make happy. If I lose one client, it's not a big deal. Even if I lost 2 clients, it's not a big deal, because there's always some revenue, you know, coming in, and there's other precautions that I've taken as well that allow me to be in a position of power or control. And, you know, to me, that's just like the biggest benefit of freelancing. And once you can get into that situation, that's where the flexibility comes. That's when the money comes. But again, I'll reiterate, I'm on like my 14th year of SEO. Like, do I get SEO? Yes. Like, that is not the part that I am worrying about. I worry about many other things that don't have anything to do with title tags or internal links or external links.
Yeah. So you alluded there at having multiple clients. Do you think that the freelance world, freelancers, what's the ideal number of retainer clients to work with? Obviously, if you have too many, you can't actually help them to achieve much, but you don't want too few that you're thinking, well, I really need to bend over backwards to keep this person happy and do anything.
Exactly. So what you had just said is what's critical. I don't think there's a magic number, because it really does come down to what your goals are. You know, if you want to make $300,000 and you only charge $1,000 for your retainer, you need 30 clients, you know, on average, right? You know, whereas for me, it's, I kind of take a defensive approach to my business, in the sense that I don't like having clients that make up too much or too little of my overall revenue. I like to keep them all about the same, so that if I ever lose one or two, they take an appropriate amount of revenue. Whereas I remember when I very first started, I had one client that was paying me $10,000 a month, and I spent probably 70% of my time on them. And my biggest fear was always that they were going to let me go, because I would lose 70% of my revenue. So I made myself a promise after that engagement ended, and that was an amicable ending, fortunately, so I was able to see it coming, that I wasn't going to have any client take up more than a certain percentage. Now, again, those percentages change depending on, you know, if you're taking 10 clients on or 4 clients. For me personally, because I work with larger clients and my retainers are larger, I tend to work with 3 to 4 ongoing retainers with one project that rotates. So if we keep all things more or less equal, I don't lose any more than 25% of my consulting income by losing any one client. To further diversify, and this is a whole nother conversation because it goes past freelancing, is you can diversify your funds outside of consulting. So for instance, we talked about my newsletter, the SEO for Lunch. I send that weekly. I've been working on it for 5 years. I now accept sponsors. So I do have a little bit of income that comes from that. I also have some income share from SEOjobs.com. And then, you know, I have my own personal projects. So I'm diversified not only in the clients that I take as a freelancer, but I'm a little bit more diversified in the total revenue that my business drives as a whole.
So what are the other sort of things that a freelancer can do where they're not reliant on just working with clients and not reliant on having a maximum ceiling they can ever earn?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest benefits to digital marketing as a whole, I won't even say just SEO, is we know what it takes to be able to rank and drive traffic to websites. So you don't always have to do that exclusively for clients. You can build your own resources and monetize it that way. Yeah, I've been vocal on LinkedIn again. I have one website. It's just a little hobby recipe website of mine for smoking meat. And I drove over 250,000 visits to the site in the last year. Now, I didn't do anything crazy. This was all, you know, using my Traeger smoker and, you know, smoking weekend meals for my family. But because I'm an SEO dork, I would take pictures and then basically add them to the website. And did I make a ton of money from it? No, but I mean, I think it was like $6,000 or $7,000 just from throwing ads on it. Like, I don't even try hard on it. It was just more of a hobby. But again, I've worked in the recipe niche before. I know what it takes to optimize these pages and to get them to rank well. So I decided to do it as kind of a hobby of my own. Plus, I'm already doing this. And I figured best case scenario, if it pays for my hosting and the meat that I'm smoking, that is like a great reward. So all that said, I think investing in other resources that you own is a great opportunity. I will say with the caveat is like, please don't be that person that's going to like tell everybody, you know, your secret guide to getting rich and becoming a freelancer that makes $1 million. Like, you might make some money, but probably not worth the time and effort that goes into it.
Yeah. So going back to the people that's just wanting to start out as a freelancer or maybe thinking about it, realistically, how much capital should they have up front? Say for instance, they need to earn X amount as a minimum. How many months do they need to make sure they have in advance before making the decision to jump ship?
So I would say a 6-month bankroll would be a good amount. The reason that I say 6 months is 6 months would give you enough time to truly understand whether you can find success in freelance, you know, whether you have what it takes to do the business side or whether your skills are sharp enough to be able to get results. And if at the end of 6 months, you're not able to find success, hopefully you're not going into debt. And the best part about the SEO industry, and I even told myself this, is everybody's hiring. Like, getting an SEO job is not hard. You can go back to an agency job, an in-house job, and hopefully the worst case scenario is you've learned a whole ton. You know, maybe freelancing isn't for you. And, you know, you've burned through some emergency savings, but you're not in significant debt.
Right. So on that front, now, a lot of SEOs I've spoken to who are thinking about going in said, well, everyone's just telling me to just go for it. Things will happen. Just go for it. Give up your job, you know, and make it happen. But that's not reality. Obviously, I've done freelancing. You're in freelancing. That is not reality. And I see it as a... false promises, you know, give up your job and I'll give you all this work and I'll, you know, do all this. And, but, you know, somehow they need to understand reality of it.
Yeah. And I think that's where, again, being prepared, you know, I always tell people that are interested, first and foremost, make sure you try freelancing on the side, because I know a lot of people, I've been the person that says, I'll send you some work, you know, give it a shot. And I know people that ultimately hated freelancing. Like, they don't have the drive to be able to stay on top of it. You know, not to say that they need to be told what to do, but they don't want to own all the processes and the business side of it. It's just not interesting to them. And there are some people that, you know, work at companies that are fantastic. They treat them well, they pay them fairly. You know, and money may not even be like their biggest benefit or, you know, their biggest goal. So, I mean, definitely really consider again, what are the goals? Why would you want to do this? You know, and then I would say, really try it on the side and build up that emergency fund, because I do think there is something about, sure, I mean, you can quit your job and you can very likely get your job back. but don't go into it blind, like assuming that you're going to make a ton of money day one. And as we had talked about at the very beginning of this call, the risks are only higher when it's more than just you. You know, I have a family of five, including myself, so I was never going to just leave my job. Well, I mean, I guess I was fired, so yes, that happened, but I wasn't going to willingly do that. But, you know, I think those are all things that you should just keep in consideration.
Okay. So is there anything that we haven't discussed that you feel is really important for anyone within the freelance world?
I think the only thing that we didn't talk about that would be beneficial is reach out to people that freelance either full-time or on the side and just talk to them. Like, ask them what they like, what they don't like, how much they're charging, what they think is reasonable, because that's going to help you get a better understanding of what the lifestyle kind of is before you even dip your toe in it. You might find that there are things that people say that they're like, wow, I don't want to ever have to chase an unpaid bill. I don't want to have to do taxes or hire an accountant. So just talk to people. I mean, this industry especially is so generous with our time and knowledge. All you have to do is reach out and ask somebody for 15 minutes of their time or send an email. And it's very likely that they're going to take the time and respond to you. And there's just a wealth of information to be had.
Right. Do you think SEOs will be upfront about talking about how much they charge and earn then?
You know, I think that talking about money is a bit taboo, but I think we are trying to normalize it. I especially am trying to normalize it. I've been pretty upfront about some of my rates and some of my earnings. I think if people aren't willing to say specifically what they earn, you know, they are willing to talk about, when I started freelancing, I charged $100 an hour, or, you know, I made 50 grand, you know, doing these type of things. So it doesn't always have to be, you know, hey, Mark, send me your taxes so I can see the exact amount of money you've made. It's being able to just better understand, what do you charge? What made you think about that being a good rate? And if you could go back, would you have charged more or less? And just trying to understand from there.
Yeah. I mean, that's something you've just sprung something in my head. If you could go back now, knowing what you know now, would you have done anything different when you started freelancing?
Yeah, I would have done it about 5 years earlier. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's the biggest thing is I got very comfortable in my jobs. And I also had kind of a sense of what I thought was job security. You know, there's like a false sense of job security when you think you're really good at what you're doing. There's no way you'll ever be let go or be made redundant. And the reality is, we're all seeing in this economy, companies have to take care of themselves first. So you should never think twice about taking care of yourself first. And if I had known what I know now, I probably wouldn't have changed much in my first 5-6 years of my career, but I would have made the jump to freelance much earlier.
Well, many thanks for your time. Now, is there anything the audience watching or listening to this can do to help you?
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to see you over at the lunch table. Like I said, I do have a weekly SEO email that I think you guys will enjoy. You can check that out at SEOforLunch.com. Otherwise, you know, follow me on Twitter at Nick Leroy, or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active under Nick Leroy as well.
And the final question, what does the future hold for you?
Oh, I love that question. The future holds a lot of excitement and decision-making that I am in control of.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. And I'm sure the audience will get massive value out of this.
Yes, thanks, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.